You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
Green Day's on. Rock and Roll Hall of Famers Green Day. Your guys. Love Green Day.
Hard not to like them.
Love Green Day.
They do it right.
Yeah.
They, short and sweet.
They qualify. So to qualify for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it's got to be 25 years after your first album was released. They qualify in their first year of eligibility.
They're going in this year?
Yep.
Now, are you going down?
I think they're already in. I think
they already put them in.
Yeah. So, Gord Miller, Dave Festuck here, Brian Hayes, and the crew are off for the summer. Except, as Al Pacino said, just when I thought it was out, they pulled me back in. Hayes can't stay off the radio.
No,
he is vibrating at home right now. Since the Kawhi news broke, I heard it. I woke up at a cottage at about 2 a.m. and because their 16-year-old daughter came home finally.
Oh wow!
In a boat. And so I heard that, and
la-di-da.
I checked Twitter, and bingo, there it was.
There it was.
And whenever Hayes found out, we'll find out the circumstances, he has been vibrating. He tweeted out that Twitter is not a sufficient medium for me to express my views.
I'm kind of half surprised he didn't like sprint in here at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, and just
throw you out of that chair
and do a telethon, or just like start Saturday and do like a. Remember the student in Ottawa when the Sens got knocked out? They take calls until no one called in. They'd be on to like 6 a.m. And so Hayes is going to join us at 6. Jack Armstrong is coming up. Scott Mitchell, our Blue Jay reporter, will join us. How about Justin Verlander?
Mm-hmm.
Comes out and says that the baseballs. First of all, 100% believe that Major League Baseball has implemented juice balls to increase home runs. Now, if you didn't know, Major League Baseball, I think it was last year, bought Rawlings.
They did.
They own the company that makes the baseballs.
Yes, they do.
So Verlander's saying, well, let's get this straight. They own the company, and all of a sudden home runs are spiking. What do you think? Major League Baseball players are on pace to hit 6,800 home runs this year.
Which would obliterate the record they set in 2017.
Which was 6,100, wasn't it? Like
it's crazy.
It would destroy it.
Now, Verlander has a vested interest here. Nobody in baseball has given up more home runs than Justin Verlander. Why may he be salty about the balls?
He might have a dog in the fight.
I
will admit he might have a dog in the fight. However, look, there's no question that, I mean, baseball juiced the ball at times to increase offense.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, after last year, after what we saw last year, where the entertainment value was so low, right?
Pretty bad.
Now, I will say this. We'll talk to Scott about the home run derby. You know, when you've seen one home run, you've kind of seen them all.
But that's...
Like watching guys hit bombs all, you know, like, okay. Like off batting practice pitching, like, really?
I'll tell you, man. One of the great thrills of my sporting watching life was watching Barry Bonds take batting practice. You ever see that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just the visceral thrill of seeing somebody do something that nobody else on the planet can do. I mean, to just murder baseballs.
But not a contest.
Look, I understand it does get repetitive.
The problem with the home run derbies, you see like 200 home runs. It's like...
No, it gets repetitive for sure. But I'm a big fan of it, partly because my family, we got this tradition. We watch it together. We're a baseball family.
It goes back generations. Oh, wait, the home run derby started.
No, not generations. But like truth be told, it's the one sport my wife likes. So I try to encourage her watching it.
Wait, your wife likes one sport?
Well, she likes others, but she'll actually watch baseball.
I don't know anyone who is not much of a sports fan, but they only watch baseball.
Yeah,
like, I know. To me, baseball has always struck me as being a hardcore sports person's sport. Like, I can see if you're a casual sports fan, I watch the NFL, you know. Yeah,
everybody watches the NFL, right, and right. She does. I mean, right, she'll watch the right. Raptor game. She'll watch a hockey game if my son's playing in it, you know. But baseball is just her thing. She likes baseball. So I like to meet her at that and encourage that. And then the home run derby, like to me tonight, it's going to be about Vladdy, right? There's a joy in that kid's love of the performance. I think you might warm up to that maybe tonight, Gord.
Yeah.
You know? They're repetitive. I won't be
watching it.
You won't even if Vladdy's on a tear, you're not going to turn it off?
I can watch it afterwards.
Like, okay.
If I hear he did it well, I'll screen it back.
Yeah, fair enough. And you won't miss much.
I don't need to sit through 500, you know, swings at... Like, well, you covered Vince in the slam dunk.
I did. Right? I was there
for that.
Oracle,
right?
Yeah.
It was great and everything else, but... Like, the slam dunk contest has jumped the shark now, hasn't it?
But I do think there's moments, right? Like, it has jumped the shark. Most of them are not particularly noteworthy. You don't remember them all. But that Vince one, I mean, when he unleashed that reverse, you know, 360 that started the thing, like that was a different level of athleticism than any of us had seen. That was something that made everybody in that gym, including the guys who were really good dunkers, drop their jaws and say, wait a second, we're seeing something here that we haven't seen before.
So I'm a sports announcer who just confessed that I won't be watching the only live sporting event in North America tonight.
That's okay. It's a live sporting event in quotation marks, right?
So today and Wednesday are the only days in the year, in the calendar year, when Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NHL, and NFL are not playing.
Right.
The only days on the calendar.
So tonight is the Derby, and Wednesday night they got our friends down at ESPN have their ESPYs on Wednesday night.
ESPYs, yeah.
Which Tracy Morgan is hosting, and I can't wait because I'm a huge Tracy Morgan
and
guy.
He's edgy.
He's hilarious.
Remember
he
when
just
Norm
came back up, nearly died in a car accident.
Remember when Norm MacDonald did the ESPYs?
I do remember that.
Yeah. That was beyond edgy.
This is his only time doing it.
That was a one time only. Our next guest on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Jack Armstrong. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Gord, Dave, how you guys doing?
We're great. So tell us where you were and how you heard that Kawhi had gone to the Clippers.
I was in bed. actually, I was out in Nova Scotia. I just got back late last night. I was at playing golf at Cabot Links, Cabot Cliffs. Ooh. So I got up. I'll be early each day, so I got up around, I don't know, 5:30, 6 o'clock Atlantic time, and there's my phone blowing up. So that's how I found out, and obviously disappointed. Nonetheless, as you guys both know, the players have been getting the short end of the stick for a long, long time in baseball and hockey and football and basketball. And based upon a collectively bargained legal agreement between the players and owners in the NBA, these guys are independent contractors. And Kawhi Leonard was drafted by the Indiana Pacers and immediately shipped to the San Antonio Spurs and then was traded to the Toronto Raptors when he didn't request a trade there. So this is the first time of his career that he has the right as an independent contractor to choose where he wants to work. And though I'm disappointed, we have John Tavares in Toronto who took less money to come play for his hometown team. And this is a guy in Kawhi Leonard on two different occasions, one in San Antonio and now in Toronto, collectively has left over $80 million U.S. on the table to go where he wants to go as an independent contractor.
Yeah, fair enough, Jack. I understand where you're coming from there. I guess maybe having one of the wealthiest 20 people on the planet as the owner of the Clippers, Steve Ballmer might have a way to make that up to Kawhi somewhere along the way, let's just say.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. And Bruce Arthur, I read his column, I don't know if it was yesterday or whatever, there was one line in his column that kind of mentioned that. And to me, and what you just said right there, having been a college coach, there is what's on the table and there is what's under the table. And if something like, and we're joking about it, but if something like that exists, then, you know, there needs to be an enforcement division of the NBA enforcing something like that. Now, I didn't bring it up, you did. But the reality is, if something like that were to exist, and you would say to yourself, what man in his right mind would leave $80 million U.S. on a table, and what agent wouldn't want 4% of that $80 million? I mean, right. You got to have your head examined. So to me, I hope and pray that everything's on the table and everything's done legitimately within the rules of the because if you're one of the other 29 owners, you don't care how rich Steve Ballmer is. You're all trying to do things on the up and up, I would imagine.
Jack, let me ask you this. Let's take a hypothetical here and say that Paul George was the free agent and Kawhi Leonard had a year to go on his deal. And Paul George reaches out to Kawhi and says, get traded out of Toronto and I'll sign with the Clippers. I got to think that on Saturday morning, fans in Oklahoma City were saying, wait a minute, our team gets blown up because Kawhi Leonard wanted to play for the Clippers? Like, is that fair?
You know, today's player has been enabled, empowered, entitled. You know, that's today's athlete. And I'm not just talking our sport. You know, all four major professional sports talk to GMs, talk to presidents, talk to owners, talk to people around teams. I mean, that's today's athlete. You know, it's a different deal. And the ultimate E is of those I mentioned is empowered. And they are taking control of their careers, and they know they have a short lifespan, and they're going to play where they want, and they're going to live where they want, and they're going to play for who they want. And if that guy's not who they want, they're going to get his you-know-what fired.
Right.
And that's just, I mean, it's crazy, but that's the world we live in now. And literally, the best teams understand that you have to create partnerships with your best players and their representatives and do the best you can navigating those murky, dark waters sometimes to make things happen. And I would argue that when you look at the move that Masai Ujiri made, you know, to acquire Kawhi Leonard, it's one of the greatest trades in sports history because he got a hired gun, and the hired gun delivered a championship. And in spite of the fact that we're all disappointed, this is a big boy business, and the reality is he had the right to go where he wanted, and the Raptors knew that risk going in, and they knew the landscape going in, and yet they still had the you-know-what to make that deal, and it worked out beautifully. And I think the experience that we all had, whether it be from a Toronto perspective, the province, the country, it will bring great things long-term to not only the sport, but to the franchise, because now I think the franchise and how players around the league and their agents look at Toronto and Canada as a destination to play, I think all those images people saw will still put this franchise in a position that it is definitely considered one of the elite first-class franchises in the NBA.
No doubt, Jack. I mean, when you think about the position Masai Ujiri is in now, though, and you look at the impending expiring contracts of Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, you weigh the idea that you can still be a really decent playoff team, a team that could win a round or two with your existing lineup if you kept it together, or you could try and maximize the value of those veteran players, Jack, with what you're remaining on their deals, and try and look forward to, say, the 2021 free agent class with building around Pascal Siakam and whoever else you might be able to attract in 2021. How do you approach that if you're Masai?
Well, I think they have plan B, C, D, all the contingencies in place. And don't forget Fred VanVleet's a free agent after mm-hmm. next year as
Good
well.
Point.
I think they've positioned themselves nicely. I think, you know, this has been an amazing six-year run. And in the sixth year, you get your championship. You can't win every year, as we know, and it's not easy. And, you know, let's face it, there's almost an underground effect going on where, you know, you have ESPN, Disney, and the Turner people who've given the NBA 9 years, $24 billion U.S., and whether it be overt or covert or underneath the surface, they want to see players and they want to see the biggest markets have the best teams because it benefits their business.
Right.
So it's not easy running a franchise in Toronto, but it's not easy running a franchise in Indiana and Portland and Charlotte and Utah and all those other places, but it can still be done. And we just saw it done. And we've seen it done over 6 years where you've had the best record in the Eastern Conference in the last 6 years, and then you cap it off with a title. Now you got to reboot. And you're still going to have a good team, a team that went 17-5 without Kawhi Leonard last year. And to me, they're still going to be in the hunt and be a really good team in the East. So to me, that is the biggest decision, Dave. I would agree with you. Do you play it out and have a really good year and go to the playoffs for the seventh year and, again, recruit from a position of cap space and winning culture? Or do you say, I'm going to turn these guys into longer-term, younger assets that I can build and continue to keep this thing going and make the playoffs for the seventh year, the eighth year, the ninth year, and then make that run at some point again to get to win your conference and to get to the NBA Finals and win another title.
You know how long Jack's been doing Raptor games? He said reboot like a Canadian, not a guy from Brooklyn. you said like reboot.
Did I say it that way?
You
well,
did.
21 years. So
you know what?
You know,
you're playing Cabot Cliffs. You're in Nova Scotia. Like you're one of us, man.
I love it,
Jack. What is the Kawhi Leonard legacy in Toronto, short term and long term?
Short term, I mean, his legacy to me was the first day I watched him play a practice in Vancouver back in the fall, and I said, this thing could be special, because this dude's dialed in. He's a ruthless, all-business guy, and he showed that this week, but he shows it every day in practice, too. He's first in line in drills. He's a tireless worker. He plays the game hard on both ends. The guy just is a man that lets his actions speak louder than his words. He's not an I, me, on Instagram, on Twitter, all that nonsense. He's a guy that's a baller. He's a true blue baller. So, and that played out from the first day of training camp to the last night in Oakland where they won a title. The guy just is all about accomplishment and business. And I think legacy long term, he helped bring the Raptors their first NBA title. And I say first because there'll be another one. And I hope I live to see it, but there will be others. And, you know, again, I think he helped elevate what this market's all about. And they're going to be, you know, Canada is number two in the world in NBA players behind the United States. The best is yet to come. Think of all those little boys right. and little girls that are going to be out hooping and someday playing in the NBA or in the WNBA or in Europe or playing college basketball in the U.S. and the elevation of university basketball in Canada and all that. It's great. So to me, he helped that. And, you know, I mean, again, it's a setback. But to me, I look at it, and this is a positive problem we're dealing with.
What about the impact he had on young guys, like Siakam, Anunoby, like just to be around him for a year?
Well, here's the thing. It's funny you say that. After game four, you know, chartering back the next day from Oakland to Toronto, and Nick Nurse walks by Matt Devlin and I, and he just laughed. He said, you know, I come in the locker room and, you know, talk to the coaches first before you go in and talk to the guys. And he goes, I look at my staff, I'm like, man, we're one game away from winning an NBA championship. This is pretty cool. And then he goes in the locker room and there's zero celebration. Like, it's all business. And Dave, you were there every night. You saw it, like, after game one, after game winning game three, after yeah. winning game four. The only time these dudes celebrated was after game six in Oakland.
You're
That's
right.
Kawhi. That's Danny Green. I mean, those guys, you know, so their approach permeated the room and completely all business. And, you know, Kyle Lowry, Marcus Gasol, really good veteran guys. And I think it's going to really help Norm Powell and Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby. To me, I'm excited about what it means to those guys. And organizationally, they put a lot into those guys. And now more than ever, particularly, you know, we've seen Siakam and VanVleet get it done. Now Powell and Anunoby, with Green gone and with Leonard gone, if I had to pick two guys and I say, hey, the spotlight's on you, it's time, it's your time, enough's enough, you got to get it done, it's those two guys.
You see, you know, Nick Nurse maybe looking at this personnel, Jack, and sort of building next year's team, however it ends up looking on opening night, building it maybe more around the defensive side of the ball?
I would agree. I mean, you look at a few of the guys they brought in here in the last 48 hours, and I think it reflects that. Now, obviously, shooting is going to be important, and I still think that there's some concerns there. You know, you hope that, you know, and they're not done trying to address things.
No.
But I do think that they did a, you know, Nick's a ball coach. You know, he had this reputation for 5 years as an assistant at Dwayne Casey that he was this offensive savant. No, he's a head coach. He has a head coaching personality, and he coaches all phases of the game and coaches all phases well. You know, what they say about Don Shula, he can coach his and beat yours. He can take yours and beat his.
Right.
And
right.
that's what a good coach is supposed to do. You're supposed to be able to coach all phases. So to me, I think Nick Nurse has that talent, and he and his staff will go away in late summer, early fall, as all coaching staffs do, and sit around for a few days and, you know, X and O and knock it around and talk about philosophy and building to strengths, camouflaging weaknesses, going through every player, and coming up with a system that'll tailor it that way. So I feel quite confident because I think he outfoxed Steve Clifford and Brett Brown and Mike Budenholzer and Steve Kerr. He was the better coach in all four series. So I feel really good about the fact that they have a really talented coach that will help them not only maintain competitive edge, but be a really good team still.
So, Jack, you know, Dave just asked you the question, whatever the team looks like, you are looking at the fact that Kyle Lowry's got an expiring contract after this year, Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol. Do you think the Raptors ponder making wholesale changes, maybe moving some of those veterans and going younger now?
Well, that possibility exists. The question is that possibility exist right at this moment, or does it exist maybe in January, February, before the trade deadline? Do you give it a look and see? Do you allow the process to breathe around the league a little bit and see which teams are buyers, which teams are sellers? You know, I could think of one name right off the top of my head, and I'm not one for making hypothetical trades, but does a team like Minnesota want to cleanse their books a little bit and move a guy like Andrew Wiggins,
right,
who has been good, but in their eyes sometimes maybe not good enough? Does the pressure of and the intensity of playing on national TV every night and playing in his hometown maybe bring out the best in him?
Right.
You know, maybe does, you know, I'm just, you know, so, and Nick Nurse might have the opportunity to coach that guy this summer, you know, to get a read on what that guy's all about. And again, you know, I'm just throwing that out there, but there's probably 5, 6, 7 other guys out there in the league like that, that potentially are on longer term deals that you might feel like in a reboot are part of the winning process and keeping this thing going and reshaping your team to get back, to continue to go on that path of trying to win another championship. Or do you just cleanse your books and let these guys play things out and then say, hey, we have a world-class market. We're open for business. We got money. Let's roll. So those are the two approaches.
We're with Jack Armstrong, our TSN Raptors analyst. Jack, you were just in Nova Scotia. I've had the good fortune to be, I was in Vancouver a few weeks ago after the Raptors won. I've been all over the place. I think, to your point about kids shooting hoops in the driveway, everywhere you go in this country, people are talking basketball. And I know that you've been an evangelist for the sport for a long time, but it must be really gratifying to you to see just the depth of basketball love now, not just here in Toronto, but across the country.
Well, yeah, before I was in Cabot, I was in Halifax for a few days for a charity golf tournament. And, you know, I'm a runner, so I get up every morning and run. And I'm running in Halifax. And, you know, all the, you know, in a nice residential area, all these homes have baskets. I'm running by Dalhousie University, and there's kids, you know, dribbling the balls to go to basketball camp. And I'm going, this is really cool. This is really awesome. And, you know, I'm wrapping up my 21st year with the Raptors, and I'm so excited about that. I think back to 1995 or 94, whenever it was announced that the Raptors were going to be in Toronto and the Grizzlies were going to be in Vancouver. And I remember being the head coach at Niagara at the time and sitting with my staff in a meeting and saying, guys, that's the new frontier right there. And it's an hour and 15 minutes from our campus. We gotta get guys out of Toronto. That's where it's going to happen. We got to get guys out of Canada because we're a border school. And that place is a sleeping giant. And then, you know, here I am in 1998. I get hired by the Raptors, and now I've been part of it for 21 years, and I've seen it grow so much that every one of my college coaching friends, they are all in Canada. They're recruiting coast to coast in Canada because there are guys that are really good Division I, Division II, Division III players, you name it. So the word is out. And, you know, years ago we used to talk about Lithuania and, you know, France and Australia and this one and that one. No, Canada now is that country where it's booming. And it's just so great to see.
Preach, Jack, preach. That's Jack Armstrong, our TSN Raptors analyst. You're going to have a great summer, my man. I know you're already having one, but be Canada's guest this summer, okay? Just be Canada's guest.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
All right, Jack Armstrong, join us in the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are back. Purchase any new vehicle and get a $500 gift certificate to Appliance Canada. Plus, get rates from 0%. Visit MapleToyota.com. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and you're watching on TSN4. Just past 5:29. Keep giving the time.
You love that.
Why not?
The old style radio DJ shtick.
It's kind of gone the way of the Condor, hasn't it? Gordon Miller, Dave Festchuk. I'm in for Brian Hayes for the next 2 weeks. So we're going to try to, you know, keep it going here. Hayes is going to call in at 6.
He can't let you have the show to yourself for three straight hours.
And you know what's going to happen. He's going to call in today and say, have a good 2 weeks, I'm gone. And then something's going to happen with Marner.
Yeah, he'll call in for that.
He's going to call in again. So basically what's going to happen is Hayes is going to be sitting by the phone for 2 weeks.
When the long-awaited Marner offer sheet drops, Hayes is going to rush in here, throw you out of that chair.
If Marner gets offer sheeted, Hayes will be in the studio.
He will be.
He will be in.
That would put him over the edge.
I don't believe that's going to happen, but...
Well, we don't believe it, but you did... You won a bottle of scotch. Am I wrong about
whiskey.
This?
Whiskey, not scotch. Whiskey. Let's make this clear.
Okay.
Irish whiskey.
An Irish whiskey.
Not scotch.
A fine Irish whiskey.
A bottle of Middleton, very rare.
Sounds very pricey.
I think it's about 300 and change at the LCBO, yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
That's too rich for my blood.
So, yeah.
And you won that. Let's play this out. You won that bottle because you correctly predicted that there would be an offer sheet this offseason.
I did. I also won dinner from another GM.
Yes. And this was have you received this bottle yet?
Not yet.
It's going to be coming from a GM in the NHL.
I will say this, and without divulging the person's identity, it does have to clear customs.
Okay.
So there you go.
You're
down to 24.
24 possibilities.
24 possibilities. Tonight, it's baseball's home run derby in Cleveland. So we'll be watching Vladdy Guerrero Jr. Our Scott Mitchell is on the scene.
All right.
Scott, thanks for joining us. How much excitement is there around Vladdy Guerrero Jr., just generally around the media and fans in Cleveland?
Well, I mean, it's funny you ask that, and I don't even think it's media and fans that we just wrapped up the pre-derby presser, and one of the questions was, who are you guys most looking to see? And most of the veteran guys said Vladimir Guerrero Jr., just because he's still kind of, he's still kind of that curiosity that people want to see, and he's 20 years old, obviously the youngest home run derby competitor ever. So, you know, when you see Josh Bell, who is having a fantastic season with the Pittsburgh Pirates, when you see him say, yeah, I'm interested to see this kid hit, that kind of tells you kind of the buzz that's still around the game about him.
So, Scott, tonight is a night that baseball celebrates the home run, worships at the altar of the long ball. I'm interested in your take on Justin Verlander's comments about the juiced balls that he alleges Major League Baseball has put into play to glorify the home run, not at the Derby, but in everyday baseball. What do you make of Verlander's comments here?
I knew where that was going as soon as you kind of teed up that question. And it's interesting. I mean, we've been talking about juice baseballs now for a couple of years. And, you know, I think it's better to talk about juice baseballs than juice baseball players. But, I think when you do listen to Verlander's comments, he's giving up home runs kind of right now at a record pace for him. So he's obviously frustrated with some of the things that are going on. And, yeah, you talk to people around baseball and there's definitely something going on with the balls. But, I mean, this has been a story now for two seasons. And, you know, whether that is a Major League Baseball intended consequence in trying to get home runs and offense going. It works. And, I don't love today's style of play, too many strikeouts. I wouldn't say too many home runs, but when that's the only way teams are scoring runs these days, it does kind of, promote a brand of what I feel is kind of boring baseball. I mean, everyone loves home runs going over the fence, but when it's a bunch of solo shots and there's really nothing else going on in terms of balls and play, it is a problem. And pitchers are obviously frustrated. Marcus Stroman was asked the same thing today, and he kind of smiled and said, yeah, whatever Verlander said, and he said, I'll retweet it. So, pitchers know what's going on, and if you really talk to these guys, they just say the ball feels different. And, you know, I think the biggest evidence you have at this point is they in AAA this year, they moved to using Major League Baseballs, and, AA and below, they still use the minor league balls. And what's happened? Well, the home run rates in AAA have skyrocketed. So, if you like home runs and you like the style, style of play, you probably love it. And if you kind of harken back to the days where, you know, stolen base and bunting and, you know, kind of moving runners around, if that's your thing, then you probably don't like it today. And, you know, pitchers, they're giving up home runs, and they obviously don't like that because that affects their, you know, their stat line and their earning power.
Well, Scott, baseball's on pace for more than 6,600 home runs this year, which is would be 500 more than the previous record. Verlander also points out that Major League Baseball bought Rawlings last year, which makes the baseballs, and said, "I find it really hard to believe that Major League Baseball owns Rawlings, and just coincidentally, the balls become juice." So he's not just saying the ball's lively. He's saying that Major League Baseball bought Rawlings and is doing this on purpose.
Yeah, there's definitely an interest there on both sides for the home run to be up. So, I mean, you know, I think at this point, without anyone from Major League Baseball ever going to say it, you know, they know something's going on with the balls. They know they've changed it. Talk to pitchers, they say it feels different. So, I mean, how you look at that, I mean, you know, I think most people would have thought that, you know, Major League Baseball would have kind of owned their own baseball company years ago and kind of been making their balls for a long time. But, you know, it's a very savvy point that Verlander brings up. And obviously there's a lot of money involved in this game, and Major League Baseball is making sure that, you know, fans are getting what they think people want right now, which is home runs.
So, Scott, tonight's derby is interesting for one reason in particular, that it's the first time they're giving the winner $1 million. What do you think that means? What are players saying about this newfangled prize money?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you look at, you know, the names that are in this, and, you know, a lot of them are high draft picks, which means it comes along with a fairly significant signing bonus. Like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. got, you know, give or take $4 million to sign as a 16-year-old. So I don't think the money is going to change much for these guys, but it definitely does put something on the line. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see who wins it. And, you know, if it's a guy like Carlos Santana, who's been around this game for a long time and, you know, has $50-plus million in the bank, you know, does he do something creative with it? Does he donate it? You know, it'd be interesting to see. But, I mean, you know, definitely for some of the young guys, I think if you look at a guy like Peter Alonso, who wasn't a first-round pick, you know, maybe he, you know, really kind of looks at that as something that, you know, is a real incentive for him. But, you know, these guys are in this derby for a reason. They're all going to make a whole lot of money, more than $1 million, that's for sure.
So the Blue Jays are 24 and a half games out of the break. Marcus Stroman's been very much, you know, talked about. What's his mood, and where do you think the Blue Jays go from here after the All-Star break?
Marcus is fairly relaxed, actually. You know, this isn't new to him. We asked him last year at the trade deadline. We asked him in the winter. You know, it's kind of been rumored that you know, he would be one of the guys on the move when they really did kind of sink their teeth into this rebuild. And, you know, that looks like what's going to happen. And when you look at today, obviously national baseball writers, obviously the New York writers, they're keenly interested and keenly aware that the Yankees are one of the teams that Stroman could end up on. And, you know, when you read between the lines of some of his answers, I think New York is the spot he wants to be. And that's obviously for a number of reasons. First of all, he's a Long Island kid. His eyes light up at the chance to pitch in the Bronx. And even Sunday, when he's supposed to return, and he told me he's on track to kind of make that start on Sunday from the pec issue. There's a lot of reasons why he would want to be there. Brand is probably number one. The fact that he does crave the big stage and the postseason stage, and obviously the Blue Jays are quite a ways away from that, and the Yankees are probably going to be, you know, one of the World Series favorites in October. And when you look at what he's doing right now, he admitted today that he was, you know, he's extremely disappointed not to be throwing in tomorrow's All-Star game. But when you read between the lines once again, he kind of knows the second half of the season is going to be important for him, and it's obviously not going to be important if he's in a Toronto Blue Jays uniform, but he's kind of saving those bullets for October. And when you look at the suitors, there's a number of them, man. It's, you know, it's going to be probably a very good market for Ross Atkins to be able to cash him in, especially if he returns on Sunday and pitches lights out in the Bronx. And, you know, there's no secret that Stroman wants to put on a show, and even in front of Brian Cashman, and make sure that he's on the radar. So it's going to be real interesting to see how it goes. But, you know, as far as the Blue Jays, this is a very important time these next 3 weeks. They've had trouble maximizing assets over the last couple of years, and Ken Giles and Marcus Stroman are two of the top chips on the market. And Ross Atkins really has to work to make sure that they're recouping something, and it's not another Josh Donaldson situation. It's not another Marco Estrada situation, because these guys are controllable for next year. So there's really no reason to move quickly unless you look at it from a health perspective. So it's going to be really interesting, but I really think these next 3 weeks and how he turns those chips into ones that will fit with this plan, it's really important for this franchise at this point.
Well, that's the angle that I was interested in, Scott. When you think about Stroman, you know, he's had, you know, injuries here and there. He's been pushed back a couple of starts with this shoulder problem. You know, we had, I think it was Steve Phillips on the morning show a couple of days ago, and he was talking about how the moment he's healthy and ready to pitch, you don't take the risk of waiting any longer. You've got to unload this guy the minute he is healthy. I mean, how do you see that?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you know, Steve and I have conversations in press boxes when we run into each other on a regular basis. And, you know, we kind of talk about the fact, I mean, he thinks that, you know, you should move them as quick as possible, May, June even. You know, he talked about in our preseason, our season preview back in March. And, you know, sometimes the market just doesn't develop like that. If teams aren't willing to really go the extra mile at this point, you know, in early to mid-June, sometimes you kind of just have to wait that market out. And yeah, it can be tricky with, every pitcher is one pitch away from, you know, a season-ending surgery, to be honest. And when you look at the situation, having two arms that have already kind of had some health problems, Giles was on the DL for a stretch in June with a little elbow inflammation. So, yeah, I mean, you would like to maximize the return as quickly as possible, but sometimes you kind of have to wait that out as contenders kind of wait till that deadline to really kind of look through their options and make sure they're looking at all their alternatives. So it takes two to tango, but I really do believe that Ross Atkins would like to move as quickly as possible, but sometimes the market just hasn't been there. And when you look at the situation right now, really no dominoes have kind of fallen. And obviously after the All-Star game, things will start to ramp up. And, you know, one thing I reported on Twitter today is Minnesota Twins and New York Yankees have asked about a potential package of Stroman and Giles, trying to fill two needs that are really obvious for both of those clubs. So, you know, I think Atkins would prefer to deal them separately, but it does seem to be ramping up, and it'll be real interesting over these next few weeks. And if Stroman does pitch well Sunday in the Bronx, you know, Steve Phillips' prediction may come true, because that may be the time to move him if he looks really good on Sunday.
Scott, thanks for talking to us, and enjoy the Derby tonight in Cleveland.
All right, man, I will. Enjoy that Irish whiskey.
Oh, you bet I will. Day after day after day.
$300 bottle of Irish whiskey. Miller, you are living the high life.
Living the life. Scott Mitchell in Cleveland, thanks for joining us. We'll be back to talk more. We got Brian Hayes calling it at 6. I can't wait.
This is going to be good.
We don't normally take calls on Overdrive, but in his case, of course, we'll make an exception.
We'll allow Brian
Brooklyn, just outside of Whitby, to call in. And also Mark Masters, the least interesting man at TSN, is going to call us from his hotel room in London.
Where he's like eating, I guarantee you what he's eating tonight, if I know Masters, it'll be like cut up carrot sticks and celery as the main course.
Yeah.
That's the kind of guy he is. That's how wild it gets on the road with Masters.
His pajamas at 10 o'clock. Actually, 10:42 now.
With like a cup of chamomile tea.
He works hard, that boy.
He does.
He works hard. And so Milos Raonic lost today at Wimbledon, and a heartbreaking loss it was. We'll talk to him about that. But there are still lots to come. You listen to Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and watching on TSN 4. 5:47 here in Toronto. Hope the traffic's not too bad. The traffic updates are a little grim these days.
You hope the traffic's not too bad.
I do.
In Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, I forgot. You're the traffic. Like, you're the chick. You hate the traffic. I know you.
Well, who likes it?
No, but you complain about it a lot.
Well, I don't. I never complain about it. I never think it's going to be good.
Where do you live?
Like St. Clair and Bathurst, a little west of that.
Yeah. So, like, I'm young Davisville. So it's, you know, you kind of deal with it. I don't drive much in the summer. I take my bike. I ride my bike everywhere.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Seems dangerous.
What?
The way cyclists get disrespected in this town. I mean, I used to ride my bike all the time. I got tired of getting run off the road.
I was dared once to ride here. I rode from my home to here once.
Did you?
Yeah, that was
That's a hike.
That was a bad decision by me.
Seriously.
It's uphill the entire way.
It is. Yeah. You should ride home from here.
They don't call it the Don Valley for nothing. Well, I had to ride home. I rode here. I had to ride home.
Okay. I thought you would have just taken public transit or something. Just packed it in.
So we mentioned Brian Hayes is coming up. Oh, by the way, a Middleton Very Rare, only $215 at the LCBO.
$215.
$215. So not, it used to be $300, and now $215.
So it's not as rare as it used to be, apparently.
Apparently, it's only Middleton, somewhat rare.
Somewhat rare.
Not very rare. So that'll be my payoff. Brian Hayes is going to join us at 6:05, and he's going to talk Kawhi. But we're going to talk a little Leafs here. And I think that, you know, we're settling into the siege now, right, with Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
Right now we're into the Leafs have about $3.7 million in cap space. With Marner unsigned, you still got the Nathan Horton overage you can use. That's not
5.8.
It's not though. It's not necessarily that much. It's not. It's 5.3. It's not necessarily that much.
Right. Whatever it is,
because
the math gets complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated math. It can be up to 5.3 if the Leafs were to use it, get themselves right to the cap when they put Horton on,
which they likely will be.
You know why the Leafs have Nathan Horton, by the way?
Because they traded for him.
Do you know why they traded for him instead of
David Clarkson?
His contract's not insured.
Right. So I do remember that.
They're paying cash.
Right. Which is no problem for them.
No, they got lots of money. But
wasn't such a good idea in Columbus.
In Columbus. So at what point do we get concerned that the Marner thing is dragging on? I mean, because there's all kinds of deadlines, right? There's, you know, is he going to get done by training camp? Is he going to get done by the start of the regular season? There's the December 1st deadline. Like, if this is William Nylander 2.0, do you have the stomach for it?
Doesn't it look like that? I mean, if the GM comes out in the wake of the season when you lose to the Bruins and says priority number one is signing this guy, mm-hmm. and then he goes and does a million other things while priority number one stays on the board, it doesn't exactly give me a lot of confidence that priority number one is getting done tomorrow.
So the difference for me is that we questioned last year whether or not Nylander was a core player for the Leafs. There was an open question, and you know, Andy Petrillo and I were at training camp every day, and I asked every guest we had, much to her chagrin, is William Nylander a core player for Toronto? And you got mixed results. There is no question Mitch Marner is a core player for Toronto.
Might be your best player.
There's no question.
Depending on how you feel. Now, I know many people feel he's not the best player. Many people feel Matthews is a better player. But I'll say this. There's a conversation there. Like, Mitch Marner's led you in scoring for a couple of seasons now. He didn't lead you in the playoffs, but he's been awfully consistent in showing up to give you what you need, give you production, compliment teammates, give guys like Van Riemsdyk and Bozak and John Tavares career seasons, depending on how you slice that apple and who you think deserves more of the credit for it. You're right. There's no doubt. He's a no-doubter in terms of do you want this guy in your team. I completely agree with that. But the bottom line is, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. Doesn't mean it's going to be easier than Nylander.
So if you had to bet a really expensive bottle of Irish whiskey.
How expensive? Is the one
$250.60.
Because $45 sounds expensive to me. So, is something like that on the market?
Would you bet that Marner gets an offer sheet?
Well, given the time has passed here, I think the offer sheet seems like
that ship has sailed.
The ship has sailed. Yeah. Does it not? I'm not. Obviously, it's possible, but I wouldn't bet on it. No, I would not bet on it.
Okay. Would you bet on him being in training camp on day one?
I would not bet on that either. No, I would not. I do not have any confidence that there is a bridge to bridge the gap between what exists on the player side and what exists in management's mind.
See, the issue for me is, in Marner's case, he loves playing here. We know that. But he also has been somewhat pushed to the side and to the back throughout his time in Toronto. He didn't get the rookie bonuses. Now you can say
all of them. Yes.
He didn't get all the rookie bonuses. You can say that was Lou, but okay.
But the other guy got him.
But Austin Matthews got them.
Yes.
He got sent right back to junior. You can say, fair enough, you know, that's the way it goes for some 18-year-olds. He was on the fourth line.
Yeah, until January 25th of the season previous to this one.
When he led the team in scoring.
Yeah.
They gave John Tavares $11 million.
They did.
They gave Austin Matthews $11.6.
I heard.
So at what point does he stop being a good guy and say, sorry, this is business?
Look, I've heard those arguments. And trust me, they hit the venom that emanates from his camp has been very visceral at times, and we've seen it. And so it's justified in many ways. You're right. Because all the kid has done is make a city fall in love with him, make every marketing executive in this region fall in love with him and want him to you know, be the front man for their product and be in the commercial for their product. This guy has got every box ticked in terms of how to be a great Toronto Maple Leaf. And yet, he hasn't necessarily been treated, at least I don't think his camp feels he's been treated, in a way that's commensurate with the way he's performed. And I understand. And I think that's the reason I'm not betting on him being in training camp unless something material changes here.
You know what he needed? He needed Kawhi to say, come to me, come to the LA Kings, or I won't sign with the Clippers. That's what he needed.
He needs Uncle Dennis.
He's Uncle Dennis.
Uncle Dennis is the executive of the year, man. He needs Uncle freaking Dennis to broker this deal.
All right. Brian Hayes coming up. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and on TSN 4.